The Power of Sound, a Monocle 24 collaboration with KEF.
Hi, I'm Johnny Byrne. I'm a film sound designer, sound editor, and sound mixer. A sound designer in the film world tends to be the person who's in charge of how the film uses sound, how it uses sound to steer the narrative and the emotional content, and the choices of how that sound is recorded and even how it's played back to the point of how you would experience that in a cinema. My early interest in sound was, I used to love the sounds of Motown and music, as kids do, and then I was a sort of product of the 80s, and I think I really enjoyed the early hip-hop and the way that I could tell the kind of production values on that were really interesting. Eric B. and Rakim and all sorts of, you know, it was a real new wave of music happening with a modernity about it and a technical aspect that really appealed to me. And then there was a particular incident when I was in my mid-teens that I think really changed things. I'd been out for a run and I came back and I was quite thirsty, and I got this plastic Evian bottle and I wedged it under a tap to fill it up, and then I got distracted. I think the doorbell must have rung or something. But when I came back, it was about an hour later, and as soon as I walked in the kitchen, I thought, that's weird. You know, I'm sure I left that tap running. You know, why isn't... And I looked at the bottle and it was only half full. And I kind of walked over, and as I put my hand up to the tap, the bottle exploded. And I was covered in water and bits of plastic. And then I suddenly realised after 10 seconds or something, you know, in the shock of what had happened, that I couldn't hear the tap running at all. And then I was sort of started panic, and I thought, wow, I'm completely deaf. And I went up to my bedroom and I put my sound system on. I felt the speakers and I could feel them, you know, the sound, the vibration, but I couldn't hear, not a sausage. And that went on for fortunately about 20 minutes. And then slowly my hearing came back, you know, and ever since then I was like, my goodness, hearing is important. You need to treasure that. And so I think from then I was always really interested in sound. When I was 13, I got a record player for Christmas, and I got another record player and put it next to it and started mixing records without like an actual mixing deck in between. I just used a volume on each one, and that was my first memory of speakers, but the speakers were very terrible and boxy sounding. And then it wasn't until 7 years later when I got a job in a recording studio in London, and it was, you know, kind of £500,000 room with £50,000 speakers. And I was absolutely blown away by, you know, it was like someone had taken earplugs out of my ears, you know, what you can actually hear. Extraordinary, isn't it? It's kind of what you can hear in a really good cinema or through an incredibly good pair of headphones. If you work on a kind of a modern drama, say, you know, not a period piece, something set in a cafe, a restaurant or a park or whatever, then it has to have birds tweeting and it has to have people in the backgrounds. And it's actually, I think that's the sort of niche that I tend to work in, is I love to use the opportunity of using real world sounds, but to give them a slight twist to them so that they do actually heighten the immersion and kind of deepen the narrative or the emotional response. I spent about 3 months going through different recordings that I had, recording things around the house, and finding the kind of critical frequency that everything had. Like, so if you sort of move a chair, it would rattle a bit and squeak, and there would be a particular pitch to it that was the dominant sound. And it got to the point where even when I'd stopped doing that, if I turn the tap on, I'd then hear it as music Like, literally, it was like a brain reprogramming. You know, they say if you lie on the edge of your sofa and watch TV upside down for a couple of days, and eventually your brain will sort of figure it out and put the image the right way up for you. I think in the same way, I got to the point of finding the specific musical frequency in everything that when I stopped technically manipulating it, my brain just carried on doing it. And it's quite disturbing. It went on for a couple of weeks. I mean, I go on holiday with a microphone, much to my wife and family's amusement. And yeah, I mean, I really enjoy exploring new sound environments, definitely. I think my favourite would definitely be going on a skiing holiday and the silence and the absence of sound when you're in a snowy mountain, because snow is such a sort of deadening thing that allows the singular events that you do hear to become so precise and definitive that you just think, wow, that's great. And I always think, God, every film should be like that. And it always reminds me that the crucial thing about sound in a film is it should just be really singular choices, bold choices, not sort of smorgasbords all over the place of different blended sounds, but cleverly chosen stuff. Whenever I watch the films that I really appreciate the sound in, the sound always tends to be just a really well-chosen recording that is really well-placed, really well-edited, and really well envisaged. The learning curve of a young sound designer is to think that a scene might need a blend of a lot of different sounds and a bit of that, like standing back from a painter standing back from an easel and giving another dab with a different colour on over the same spot. It's more about stark, bold choices that are pleasing to the ear. In general, people want to hear one thing, and that's the focus. And if you strip the thought process down to the essence of what would make a scene work really well, well, it'll be one particular sound at any particular point that will be driving the narrative of the story. And quite often I'll start a scene and have the atmosphere and someone's footsteps and the dialogue all reasonably loud, and then for 2 or 3 seconds you hear that, and then I'll sneak it away because the kind of background sound becomes less important. The ear would filter it out naturally anyway in a normal situation. So you sort of redact as the scene goes on and then point your ear at one thing and then another thing. I remember the director Yorgos Lanthimos telling me that when he sets up a camera, he likes every single shot to pretty much tell the story in some way of what that scene is doing. And that kind of made me think, yeah, should be doing that in sound really as well. The first film that I worked on was a film called Birth by the director Jonathan Glazer. I was very delighted to be asked to work on it, but I'd never worked on a film before. And my first attempts at putting sound to the very rough cut were noisy, shall we say. And we did a screening of it, and I think at the end of 2 hours, everyone walked out and said it was the noisiest, sort of loudest, over-the-top sound thing they've ever heard. And I had to then go and learn more about how to actually, what the process of putting sound on film was. And that was, quite a learning curve for me. So, yeah, I think the older I get, the less sound I want to put on film. Yeah, musicality is very important in sound. And I think pretty much everything has a kind of inherent musicality to it that is there to be coaxed out should you want to find it. You know, with quite a lot of the things that I work on, if I put a wind on, if there's a scene and there's some trees moving, then you could have a kind of wind. But if the music has just finished on a particular note, then you can find that frequency in the wind and make the kind of there become, and you spike that particular frequency in the wind, and as the music ends, the wind will then pick up where the music sort of left off and soften the edge of a filmic juncture kind of thing. for me, it's very important that a film works cohesively, and that, you know, a film is attempting to be a reality, but in some ways it's a suspension of reality, and it's a dramatization mostly. And so to let the musicality of the actual score pervade into the room tones and the rhythms of people's footsteps and everything is no bad thing. Isn't it funny how sound really is so characterful, isn't it? And it really is, like, it's like a sort of fingerprint for everything, isn't it? It's everything is, there's actually an awful lot of different sound out there. And if you stand in like a busy shopping centre street or something, you'll hear a bus with like wailing brakes and hissing brakes. You'll hear a baby crying. You'll hear someone on a bicycle shouting. You know, all these, like, you know, it's exciting, isn't it? It's kind of, there's so much going on. I love walking around with a really good pair of headphones that kind of block out all the other sound, and then a very directional microphone, and you can just sort of sweep around and point it, and it's like you've suddenly got like an X-ray vision, you know, you can hear something 50 feet away that you were never going to hear otherwise. I introduced my children to that one sunny summer's day a few years ago, you know, wandering around in nature with a headphone and going right up to a, you know, with a microphone going right up to a bee, and suddenly you hear this kind of boom, you know, it's like a sort of rocket ship when it's that kind of loud. It's brilliant. Yeah, very exciting for kids as well. Sound definitely has some kind of hotwire to the senses and the emotions through some sort of nostalgia link that other senses simply just don't have. I mean, if you can look at a photo of when you were younger and it will make you go, oh, you know, that, look, I've got long hair, or, you know, one of those things. But if you actually hear a piece of music that you were dancing around to when you were, you know, 20 years ago or something, then you are literally back there for a minute. You know, you all the memories come back, and I'm not sure what that is. I mean, I think it's they've done brain scans where they show people images and they play them sounds, and the brain is way more activated in different areas when people listen to something. And it's something to do with the physicality of moving to music and the memory of that, as well as just the fact that for some reason sound maps to many different more locations in memory than certainly touch and vision do. And I think sense of smell has a almost similarly powerful linked to nostalgia and emotion that sound does. But I think sound for me is really the only one that can actually draw a tear from you, for, you know, it can really, really just make you experience the exact same emotions you were when the last time you heard that bird, that song, you know, that beautiful bit of sea that you recorded on holiday or whatever. It's very strange. What is that? I have no idea.